From the studios of WBAA Public Radio in West Lafayette, this is Indiana Public Broadcasting's monthly conversation with Purdue University President Mitch Daniels. I'm Stan Jastrzebski, and we appreciate you joining us on this month's program. We'd like to point out that if ever you've got a question, you can send that to news@wbaa.org, and you can also tweet your question at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, let me start out by asking you something that I wanted to get to last month, and we ran out of time, which was the university's decision to add dental benefits as a matter of course to employees. And this is something that when I first moved here, I heard from people who said, don't get the dental benefits. They cost too much. They don't do enough. I get the sense I was not the only person who was told that. Is that fair to say?
I guess. But I do know that it was an aspiration or a hope of a lot of people, including those of our folks who were responsible for crafting compensation programs, and we're really, really very happy that we were able to tack it on now.
How did that come about? How did you finally find the means or the way to do that?
Mm-hmm. I think we've discussed before the fact that when we shifted Purdue, or at least made additional options available for our overall health coverage that were more consumerist in nature, more true insurance, I would call it. So people with a health savings account and looking after their own routine bills but protected against a big medical cost in true insurance fashion. When we did that and we had a very large shift because it also provided lower premiums for people, I think that helped. I think everybody but me was surprised how swift and big the shift was from 20-some percent to 70-some percent in these consumerist plans, and it's probably going to keep going up. This had the effect that we've seen it have all over the place, which is that as soon as people begin to get a little bit of their own skin in the game in healthcare, the same way that we have it in essentially every other service we consume, you get reductions in the overall cost. And we got a really big one. And so the dental benefit, autism's the second good example, we were able to plow back several million dollars, around $6 million, into new benefits that came from the savings from consumerism in healthcare.
So one of the things I know that large organizations and municipal governments have been dealing with in recent years has been this spike in healthcare costs. And this, unfortunately for a lot of places, happened right around the time of the recession, and so it ended up being a double whammy for a lot of people. What is Purdue seeing? Are we seeing that costs are plateauing out, or are you still seeing a gradual incremental increase year over year?
Haven't seen last year's number yet, but we actually have seen some reductions in our utilization cost. And again, I wasn't surprised. Went through this at the state. First with state employees, then with the so-called Healthy Indiana Plan. As soon as people can make careful, smart decisions for themselves, when you trust them to do that, and when you trust them with the dollars to do that, and as I say, for the first dollar and routine coverage, people begin to ask good consumerist questions. Is there a cheaper way to do that? Is there a generic drug for that? You know, maybe I won't go to the emergency room for something that's not really an emergency. And not everybody does, but enough people do, it starts to bend the line downward.
Are there, if you find more such efficiencies or you find more savings, is there a list out there of here are the next few things we'd like to be able to cover?
I'm sure somebody's got one, and we'll always look at it. And we got to these as fast as we thought we could prudently afford it. And I'm real glad, and there's been a lot of good feedback. And so it was a happy development.
I know that you mentioned autism, and I know that there was a professor, Steve Bowden, who was really behind a lot of that, and I interviewed him last year, and he's got a very personal story with his children. Is that how you find out about a lot of these things that people would want to do, is someone comes to you and says, Mr. President, the dental benefits are not what they should be?
Yes, I think there are differences. Dental benefits, very widely, of course, essentially universally used and so widely sought after. There are other things, autism's an example, where the incidence is very, very small, only a tiny percentage of all our covered employees. have to deal with that expense. I thought it spoke well, really, for the university community. What that amounts to is everybody chipping in to help a relatively very, very few people, and that's fine. That's real insurance, by the way, and I'm glad, again, that we were able to find the means to do it.
This is Indiana Public Broadcasting's monthly conversation with Purdue President Mitch Daniels. You can email questions for this show to news@wbaa.org and tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. This next topic comes from a couple of conversations I've overheard people have and relates back to one that you and I had a couple of months ago, which was you have talked on this program about trying to utilize the existing space at the university as efficiently as you possibly can, and certainly more efficiently than had been done in the past. So the question has been raised, what happens when a place, and I've heard that the Krannert School of Management is one place this might be happening, when they come to a spot where they believe that they have efficiently utilized all of their existing space, what happens then?
First thing is we ask them, are you sure? Everybody thinks they're using their space well, but sometimes they go have a look and find they can do better. And there's been some real gains. I'll praise, for example, our engineering college. We're building lots of new space for them. But we had good discussions at the front end. How many square feet per person is really the modern standard? It turns out it's far fewer in some of the open space environments that are now quite common in business settings and elsewhere. And to their credit, they went back to the drawing boards, came up with a plan, then surpassed it in terms of the number of people they could fit into the same footprint. And so that's the first step. Are you sure? Where we are sure and where we can see the demand, you can see a lot of new buildings going up on this campus. And it's not like we're not adding net to the already a massive capital structure that we have. But it's something to be approached very carefully. The bills for these things go on for decades. The bills for these things go into the overhead rate that we have to charge that on our research that we'd all like to bring down over time so our faculty can be even more successful. And obviously, it goes into the cost of a Purdue education.
When it comes to building new buildings, you look at something like the Krannert School or the Engineering School, two things that are highlighted programs that this university is very proud of, and two programs that I think probably are among the more profitable programs that the university has, if I had to guess. Does that help those programs, for instance, come to you and say, we believe we've utilized our space, would you please help us build some more? Does the profitability of the program factor in?
It could, I guess. Most of the decisions we've looked at have to do with aging facilities that just aren't good for students or faculty or staff. The average age of our facilities is up there. Lots of new ones, of course, but there's some that are quite old. And usually that's at the front end of these discussions.
Have you had to come up with a new inventory system to better track the space? Because what you have said is we were not paying close enough attention to what we were putting where and what rooms had what in them. So have you had to redesign how you track those sorts of things?
We are trying to get a better handle on it. There was no real understanding at the university level. Some individual colleges and units probably had a good understanding within their own world. But we did need to, here as in other areas, understand where we are a little better so we can be sure we're making proper decisions. Most of all, I just think we need an overall mentality that doesn't start with what kind of a new building are we going to put up, which has too often been the first instinct. And that's how you places, and by the way, there are places worse off than Purdue in this respect. That's how you wind up with lots of cost and sometimes space you didn't really need.
on to another topic. I noticed that Purdue recently had its credit rating upped by one of the major credit rating agencies, and now you've got a AAA rating from at least a couple, if not all of them. What does that do for the university's finances?
Makes them makes things a little less expensive. With a higher credit rating, we will get lower interest charges on money we have to borrow. And I think it speaks well for all the great people who work here and who've all participated in creating that rather unique distinction. There are only 5 public and 8 private universities that we can find that have AAA from each of the leading bond agencies, and we're now in that elite group. But it has a very practical effect. Same way it does, you know, Indiana got its first AAA credit rating ever in 2008. And that saves a lot of money when it has to be borrowed over time and to some extent can spill on down to local levels too. So it's a very nice, I would say, signal and merit badge that things are in pretty good shape. But it had, much more important, it has a very practical dollars and cents positive effect.
Do you have a sense of just how much you are hoping to save from projects that maybe are in the pipeline now where they would have been one interest rate before and now they're a new one?
Well, we were already one step below the best. And so it probably amounts to a few, as they say, basis points, means hundreds of a percentage point. It depends how much you borrow. Of course, back to our previous conversation, I hope we're careful about how much we have to borrow moving forward into a what is as clear as it's ever been, a risky environment for higher ed. Lots of change and lots of new threats out there. And so you want to be careful how much you borrow in the first place. But when it makes sense to, and it often will, we'll be able to do it a little less expensively.
While we're on the subject of big projects, I wanted to get your reaction to the comments that were made last week at the West Lafayette Redevelopment Commission and then in a subsequent public meeting the following day about the transparency of the State Street project and some people, including the West Lafayette Redevelopment Commission president, going so far as not just to question it, but he passed a resolution that probably won't do much, but symbolic nonetheless of the questioning of the transparency of the whole thing. What was your reaction to how all that transpired?
Puzzled. Strange is the only word I know to say. Here are these people in 24 hours were going to see everything they wanted to see. And they knew it. It's in the law. It's the way things are done. This was no less transparent than any other bidding competition, which they've been through in the old-fashioned style over and over. And you don't do these – you don't – that's what sealed bids are in the – I'll call it traditional model. You don't do that on the stage in Elliott Hall. So I just thought it was odd. 24 hours later, this is a dead letter. You know, the whole noise is proven moot. So all I could figure was maybe there was another agenda. Maybe they just don't like the project. If not, they ought to come out and say so. You know, this is the only such deal that we can find in America where a university is willing to go as equal partners with its surrounding community on a transformation this big. But we don't have to do this, and if we're not wanted. Now, after I saw the next day, I guess I just think there was a little bit of posturing or something going on here. These folks are politicians one way or another. But, you know, hopefully now we can move ahead. There seems to be, as far as I can tell, very, very broad excitement about this, what this can mean to the community and for the community. And we're eager to get moving. But I didn't know how to interpret it. And as I say, if there's an ulterior agenda here, let's hear it. But
you're the second person after the University Counsel Steve Schultz to make exactly that comment to me is there a hidden agenda? What do you think that might be?
Well, no, again, I mean, one of the councilmen said the next day, you know, maybe the community will hate it. Well, it's been out there for a year. As far as I can tell, people in large majority reflected in a variety of votes now in local elected fora have been positive about the idea. But no, I mean, it was just sort of odd. Talk about transparency when the whole thing was about to be unveiled in 24 hours. And now there'll be a further process. People can have a good look. But I hope we've sort of heard the last of that, and we can get moving on. How do we make this thing happen and make it a great success? Great success, what we're after at Purdue, for West Lafayette and the surrounding communities.
I wonder if you think that this process can be instructive, for instance, to state lawmakers who could write the law in whatever way they see fit. And one of the commenters at the public meeting last week brought up the notion that the law says these things may be kept under wraps, not that they must be kept under wraps.
If you want a good deal, you don't try to do this in the wide open. You want these people bidding against each other, not knowing for sure what that other side is doing. And that's not new. That's not different about this process. All that's different about this process, in addition to the fact the city's not on the hook for maintenance for a long, long time, advantages like that, all that's different about this process is instead of saying, here's what we want, what will it cost, you say, here's what we have to invest, how much can you do? So it's just another way of getting to that answer. And you really want these folks competing like the Dickens, not being sure what that other side or sides are doing.
But of course, if you really want a good effort. That's the same way in a sealed bid.
Yes, it is. That's my point exactly. So that's why I thought this was all strange. Let me just, in good humor, let me just say, been through this kind of thing a lot of times. We'll see these folks at the ribbon cutting. They'll be happy to be there.
So you mentioned City Council President Peter Bunder, and one of the things he said to me immediately after the Redevelopment Commission meeting last week was, he said, it's interesting to me how, in his view, the role of public education has changed. He says universities are no longer the philanthropy that they used to be. He says if this was done decades ago, Purdue would have said, look at how magnanimous we're being and look at how much we're contributing to the community around us. And now, because the build-operate-transfer process is a little bit different than the standard sealed bid process, Purdue is acting more like a private commercial entity than like a university philanthropy. Do you share his feeling that the role of the university has changed over time?
He's upset because we're not patting ourselves on the back. I mean, there is no precedent for this, as I said, that we can find. In fact, it's already starting to get noticed nationally as an innovative – the innovative idea it is. I don't know what he's talking about. I mean, I think we're being honest in saying this extraordinary thing we're willing to do, put up well over $60 million at risk, it's not charity. We think it'll be a great, great thing for the community. And as I've explained on this program many times, what's good for our surrounding community is good for Purdue because we're trying to recruit the best faculty in the world. We're trying to attract great students from all over the world. We're trying to attract business here, which is good for our university as well as Tippecanoe County. So sure, we think it's a smart thing to do, not just an act of philanthropy.
So the other thing about the build, operate, transfer process is that it tends to make one entity the sort of 800-pound gorilla in the room, and it's designed to be usually a private entity, a private corporation, but it certainly in this case can be the university, which has the money to front to the project, and then the city pays the university back over time. Does there need to be careful management of when there's one organization or one entity in the process that has more power? And it is abundantly clear Purdue has much more power in this than West Lafayette does. In fact, Councilman Bunder said, look, we have no money. We absolutely need Purdue to front this. Otherwise, we can't do big things like this. Does that mean that there needs to be a careful look from the point of view of, forgive me for saying it again, the 800-pound gorilla to see how that entity is going to be viewed in the whole process publicly?
Well, it's nice of him at least to acknowledge that this thing can't happen without the
Dennis has told me exactly the same thing. He said we need to have the public-private partnership to even think about this.
Yeah. Well, the process got all kinds of safeguards in it, and it'll start with the contract itself, which will lock somebody into performance, maintaining things. Let me tell you one thing about these deals. Not only does West Lafayette get 20-odd years of zero maintenance cost. But we've seen many, many times government short maintenance. If they get a little short of money, they let things slide, their buildings, their roads, their sewers, and so forth. That's a very common thing. This guarantees that won't happen. That stretch of infrastructure has to get paid for under the contract. So that's just one of many controls. The joint board is a joint board. I don't think one side weighs more than the other. So those are perfectly legitimate comments, but I really think they've been carefully taken care of in the planning for this really exciting program.
I'm not an engineer and I'm not an expert in public policy. I wonder if this process could be improved some way to make it a little bit more like the sealed bid process that is commonly used, which is once you hand in the bids, is there any harm in just opening them at that point? Because once the bids are in, theoretically, right?
It's the same, really, Stan. I said the only difference is here what they were bidding was a quantum of work, an amount of work against a fixed amount of money. Instead of bidding, if you'd done it the other way, somebody might have come in and said, yeah, we'll build everything you're dreaming of here, and it'll cost you $160 million. Here it's we're trying to get as much as we can, including all the essentials, and we're getting them plus for what we think is the capacity, protecting the citizens of West Lafayette, protecting the finances of Purdue.
No, it was very clear. Everybody said, look, the $120 million mark is the absolute cap on this thing. We're not going to go over
right.
that as contributed by both the city and the university.
Right.
I think the other thing, too, that perhaps didn't get as much play on this is just about everybody I've talked to has said, we're still excited about this project. And the questions had been raised about the process that led to the project. So get just a few more minutes with Purdue President Mitch Daniels on this month's monthly conversation with him here on this Indiana Public Broadcasting Station. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We appreciate you being with us. Let me talk to you about what's going on at IPFW recently. There was the state legislature put together a committee that said, please look at this. And we should say the state legislature has been looking at a whole bunch of different regional campuses. It did this with Ivy Tech as well. And so this is something that the legislature has been interested in for a couple of years now. And the group at IPFW, which was led by Purdue's trustee chairman Michael Berghoff, came back with a recommendation that it become a Purdue campus. So you kind of split off the Purdue mission stuff and the IU mission stuff, and it comes under the auspices of Purdue. How did the Purdue folks who helped make that decision come to decide that that was something that was smart for the university system writ large?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a surprising series of events to me. And I think, by the way, Chairman Berghoff would tell you the same thing. And he was sitting in those meetings. You're quite correct. The General Assembly put this thing in motion. They created the study committee and dictated more or less its composition. And I was very startled when, after several rounds, the committee said, we think we're headed in this direction, which you also described correctly. Instead of a divided or jointly run campus, you'd have a Purdue campus. You'd have a very significant IU presence really inside the campus perimeter, concentrated specifically on health sciences. I had never heard that idea before. It has a lot of natural and I think logical appeal, but I had never heard it. So credit to this committee. I don't know exactly who first came up with that. Pretty sure it wasn't one of our delegates, to tell you the truth. But we're right in the middle of this now, trying to think it through. It is not a done deal. There's a lot of issues to be dealt with to make something like that overall proposal happen up there. But let's give a lot of credit to everybody involved for thinking creatively, I'm going to say even surprisingly. And literally before I came over here today, Stan, I was on a conference call about that subject. We're going to have another meeting tomorrow, and we'll try to get this thing moving ahead, see if it can happen.
You mentioned the issue of whether it's a done deal, and that factored into a lot of the conversation I had with Chairman Berghoff and with Andy Downs, the IU Faculty Senate president. And they see it a little bit. They both agree on that, but they see it differently. Professor Downs was one of a couple of people who voted against this idea, saying that he doesn't like the language. They call what are the committees that are going to be created implementation mm-hmm. teams. And I think he doesn't like the semantics of that. Chairman Berghoff made an interesting comment to me. He said, look, if we were to send back a feasibility study to the legislature, he doesn't think they would be happy with that. And he espoused his belief also that feasibility studies largely don't do anything. But what about Chairman Downs' idea mm-hmm. that the faculty who are just now getting a widespread voice in this are being told to figure out ways to do some of these things, would you please? Does that give them enough of a voice?
Well, I think Professor Downs got a point about it. I didn't much like the nomenclature, and I think maybe they ought to change it. Implementation committee, in some years, presupposes that the deal is done, and it's just a matter of how and on what schedule. And we're not there. There are some significant open issues and things that would have to be worked out. So it's not a feasibility study, but I think it remains a study in process. But again, that process is moving now, and everybody now can see this proposal, and that's all it is. And obviously the comments have begun already, and that's appropriate.
How does this affect the relationship between IU and Purdue, if at all? Because I've noticed, you know, so this happened recently in Purdue. The Purdue trustees chairman heads this committee and says Purdue wants to be in charge of IPFW. IU goes and does things like starting an engineering program, which has been exclusively Purdue's purview for a long time. Is that significant of a cooling of relationships between the two schools
I think if anything, we're talking more and maybe trying to cooperate more than before. I'm in regular contact with President McRobbie and our opposite numbers likewise. As I mentioned a minute ago, this idea is not Purdue's proposal. And I haven't really asked, but I don't think it was any or either of our delegates on that committee that first surfaced the idea. But now that it's come up, we're certainly looking at it, and the legislature expects something different to happen here, and so we're working on what that something is.
Real quick, in just 30 seconds, what would be the biggest benefit or benefits to Purdue of being in charge of IPFW?
I don't really think that's the right question. This is the real question is what would be the benefit of Northeast Indiana, the areas surrounding Fort Wayne? There are a lot of people who believe that greater clarity of who's in charge of what would over time produce a university that does an even better job of training young people for the jobs that are there and of producing the economic development benefits that are supposed to come from a regional campus.
All right. Well, Mr. President, we are out of time again, but thanks for doing this. Happy New Year, and we look forward to doing it for the rest of 2016.
See you next month.
This has been Indiana Public Broadcasting's monthly conversation with Purdue President Mitch Daniels. All of these programs are archived at WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Have a good rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Gaylor Electric. Proud to be lead sponsor of the monthly conversation with Mitch Daniels. Gaylor provides electrical services from pre-construction design through project completion and a 24/7 service department. Information at Gaylor.com.